Morning.
Good morning.
How is everyone?
Good.
Good.
I think. Not too bad.
Good, good, good. We're trying a bit of a new system here, so that's why it's a little bit more complicated than usual. And that's kind of what's happening. So welcome to everyone on the call so far. I'm just going to do a little bit of a name check to see who's all on the call. And I'm going to just kind of read out some names. And if you could just let us know if you're here, that would be great. Is Alan here? Alan Torm. Gretchen Comick.
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, welcome, Gretchen.
Thank
Murray
you.
Fife. Jean Chin.
Present and accounted for.
Great. Jerry Grieg. Adrian Taplin White. Shirley Thomas.
Yes.
Elizabeth Chan.
Present.
Great. Patty Diplock.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Patty. Carolyn Usher. George Weens.
Good morning, Jack.
Morning. Louise Poole. Kevin.
Hi, Jack. How are you?
The star of our show. Kelly. Catherine Seeley. Teresa.
Here.
Hey, Nicole.
Here.
Great, thanks. Zim.
Here.
Great. Ashley.
Yes.
Okay, Mark. Marianne.
Here.
Good. Christine. Gary.
Yes.
Gary,
I'm here.
Great. Sharon, are you there? Okay. It was a little bit of a bump to get through. Is there anyone on the call that I didn't mention your name?
Suzanne is here.
Sharon Hammond?
No, Suzanne Gaby.
Oh, Suzanne. Sorry, I'm having problems hearing. Anyone else?
Well, you didn't see my name, but I know I'm here, Jack.
Oh, Frankie, sorry about that.
Okay.
Thanks, Frankie.
Hi, Jack. Hi, Frankie. It's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Sharon.
Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Really good to have you. So, you know what? We're going to get started here. I know that there may be a few more people that join us. We're absolutely delighted if they join us. But we want to give as much time to the presentation because we've got a lot going on. So, first and foremost, to remind everyone, the Clean Air Coalition of British Columbia includes the Heart and Stroke Foundation and the BC Lung Association, and we have been hosting these teleconferences and research meetings for the last 4 or 5 years, and about every month or every 2 months we have a guest speaker. Sometimes we have them in the Lower Mainland, and sometimes when our speakers are further afield, we do a teleconference. And so each month we try to make sure that our speaker has something very relevant and current or perhaps leading edge or something that would be very interesting for us to learn about. And so we go far afield to find people. I'm going to introduce Kevin in just a moment, but I want to provide a little bit of a background. First and foremost, I also want to let everyone know that these teleconferences and breakfast meetings and knowledge exchange meetings are funded by Health Canada. To Health Canada, and also through the support of the Ministry of Healthy Living and Sport, they help fund these as well through the line. The reason why the process is a little bit different is because we're actually trying to tape the calls and make sure that so that people who may not have an opportunity to be present will have an opportunity at some point in the future to listen to the calls. We're looking at providing a members-only access to the Clean Air Coalition website where we would be able to post some of these meetings so that people could go in and hear them at their convenience and also see the PowerPoint presentations that people have pulled together. So one of the things that the Clean Air Coalition has been doing this year is in January we launched what's called the Imagine Campaign, Imagine a Smoke-Free British Columbia. And within that campaign, many of you have already signed and expressed your support to the campaign. One of the principles that we have is to look at restricting places where tobacco products are sold. And in fact, you may have heard the name Gary Curtis. Gary's on the line. The Clean Air Coalition has actually hired Gary. He's a consultant. He used to work in government and had a number of very senior government positions. We've asked him to do an environmental scan as well as a talk to many leading tobacco control experts in Canada about ways to restrict tobacco products. And he's going to be preparing a paper for us over the coming, he's already prepared a draft for us And over the coming weeks and next month or two, we're going to perhaps finalize that paper and seek feedback from the health authorities and others on that. As I was starting to find some people across Canada, I was talking to some folk in Ontario about this whole process and what we were doing, and it was interesting because some folk in Ontario through the Ontario Tobacco Research Unit have actually applied for a Canadian Tobacco Research Grant to look into this whole issue. So they were very excited to hear that we were doing something. Again, BC sort of trying to lead the pack here. So when I was talking to folk in Ontario, they said, you should really talk to Kevin McDonald. He's with the Tobacco Control Program with the Hamilton Public Health Services because he's done something really cool. So I had the opportunity to spend some time talking to Kevin a couple of times. Kevin's been working in the field of tobacco control for over the past 10 years. And in his current role, Kevin oversees and guides a multidisciplinary team of public health professionals working in the areas of prevention, protection, and cessation. Prior to joining Hamilton Public Health Services in 2003, Kevin served as communications officer for the Ontario Division of the Canadian Cancer Society, where he worked on the development team of Ontario Smokers Helpline from 1999 to 2003. He's a graduate of the University of Guelph, and he is currently completing a master's in public administration degree at the University of Western Ontario, and he resides in Stoney Creek, Ontario, with his wife and their three kids. And so when I was talking to Kevin, he was talking about this really cool GIS stuff that they've been doing there in Hamilton. And I said, you know what, this is something that perhaps people in BC need to hear about because it's a pretty interesting stuff, and it's maybe a unique way to start looking at using IT to help us move forward on tobacco control. So Kevin has prepared a presentation for us, and hopefully everyone has the presentation in front of them. And he's going to go through that. He's going to speak probably for about half an hour or a little bit longer, and then we'll open it up for questions. So I'll leave it up to Kevin whether he would like to accept questions through the presentation or whether he'd like people to, you know, ask at the very end. But Kevin, over to you. Welcome to British Columbia via teleconference. And just a reminder to everyone, if you do have, if you're sitting in front of your computers, please put your phone on mute if you're going to be tapping away at the computer. But Kevin, over to you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jack. And can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank Jack and Sharon for the opportunity to participate this morning with you folks in BC, and for the opportunity to share some of the very formative work we've been doing around tobacco control surveillance in the city of Hamilton over the past 18 months to 2 years. What I'm going to do in talking to Jack, I've provided a full slide deck, but I think we're going to focus on a couple of slides more than others. So those following along, I'm going to briefly go over slides 1 through 7, spend a moment on 14 and 19, and then we'll just jump directly into slides 22 through the end of the deck, which primarily focus on our work with GIS. So this project, to give people a bit of context, started about 18 months to 2 years ago. And in terms of the project partners we have here at Hamilton Public Health Services, it's, as Jack alluded to, a multidisciplinary team of public health practitioners, combined with our surveillance unit. And unfortunately, the epidemiologist colleague I work with closely, Carol Craig, sends her regrets this morning. Carol's been really instrumental in helping us work with our GIS section around developing the surveillance instruments and doing the analysis. So I just wanted to acknowledge Carol up front. Turning to slide number 4, just to provide people who have not had the opportunity to visit this part of Ontario here in eastern Canada, the city of Hamilton has a population just slightly over 500,000 people. In terms of youth 10 to 19 years of age, we're trending towards the 70,000 mark. And you can see our population density there. We're a fairly dense community buffering Lake Ontario. So that just provides you with a bit of a context for the landscape in terms of our community here. I don't think in moving to slide number 5 I have to preach to the choir here on comprehensive tobacco control programming as we're conducting it here in the city of Hamilton. Slide number 6 just gives you sort of a perspective and context for where Hamilton resides in a very dense population of southern Ontario, central west Ontario, buffering the GTA. So we have approximately 2 million people residing in this part of the province. And in terms of youth, you see the overall numbers. We're also a region of 47 municipalities, and in the mid to late 90s, that was much greater, but with amalgamation and mergers, we're trending right now at 47 municipalities. Our population of youth, 10 to 19 years of age, as a total percentage of area population as of 06, we're looking in Hamilton, again, sort of right around the mean, but 10 to 19 years of age, 14% approximately of our overall population. And this is to provide you with a brief backdrop of why we're interested in this issue of tobacco product under monitoring, in particular in relation to our Smoke-Free Ontario Act and in terms of our overall enforcement efforts. So this is just to provide a bit of context. So flipping to slide 14, the slide's entitled Low Income Rates Highest in Hamilton. And again, this is just to provide further context for the environment here in the city of Hamilton. Low income among population and economic families. Hamilton is well above the provincial average as well as our neighboring communities in terms of our overall rates of poverty. So we are a community dealing with some very significant social determinant issues that come into play when I talk a bit about some of the analysis and some of the inquiry we've done with our GIF as it relates to socioeconomic status. So just wanted to highlight for people that particular issue as it relates to our community. So turning from 14, we'll jump to 19, and that gives you a snapshot, and the slide is entitled Current Daily or Occasional Smokers Ages 12 to 19 Years of Age. There's a cross-comparator there from Ontario to all the health units, and there are seven health units in central west Ontario, Brant County, Haldeman-Norfolk, Halton Region, the City of Hamilton, Niagara Region, the Region of Waterloo, and the Region of Wellington-Dufferin-Guelph. And as you can see here, we have five jurisdictions in our regions that are trending above the provincial average in terms of overall incidence. So we do have a youth incidence concern in our communities in terms of overall rates. Thus, sort of the focus on point of sale, access, all the issues. So turning our to slide 22, and from here on out, we'll just go sequentially through the deck. In speaking with Jack, the primary focus of today's discussion will be around how we've used GIS surveillance for tobacco vendor monitoring in the city of Hamilton. And so just to give people a bit of background around sales to minors enforcement here in Ontario and here in the city of Hamilton in particular, with the rollover of the Tobacco Control Act to our new Smoke-Free Ontario Act in 2006, there are existing protocols in place that look at compliance checks twice per year. And in Hamilton at the time of this data that will be presented in these slides for 2006-2007, we had 530 eligible licensed vendors available for testing and available for enforcement checks. We also respond to ongoing complaints, so above and beyond those two required checks, we also do checks on a complaint basis. So in Ontario, and I know the environment is somewhat different in British Columbia, we have an array of structures that really deal with how tobacco products are sold. From jurisdiction to jurisdiction, there are differing processes. So here in Ontario, many jurisdictions actually require a vendor's license. It can be a standalone tobacco product vendor's license, or it can be a broader vendor's license that incorporates tobacco products in it in order for these products to be sold legally in a given jurisdiction. In other jurisdictions, there is no such requirement. So in the city of Hamilton, we benefit from a long-standing licensing practice where we actually require vendors who are going to be selling tobacco products to actually acquire annually and renew a tobacco vendor's license. That license right now sits around $300 per year, and I'll talk to you a bit about sort of policy development that's stemming from this GIS exercise in relation to the vendor's fees, but It does afford us an opportunity to have a active compendium of vendors who are actually selling product, and it does give us a real sort of step up in terms of our ability to actually monitor quote-unquote legal sale activity that's going on in our community. That's not to say that we do not encounter vendors who do not have licenses and sell product, but we actually have enforcement and legal channels to go through in terms of to prohibit those sales in future. And as I had mentioned to Jack, this in no way even begins to touch the tip of the iceberg here in Ontario and Quebec in terms of our overall struggle with the issue of contraband illegal tobacco. And for those who are aware of that emerging problem as it really is impacting our province, some recent studies have suggested that overall consumption is somewhere in one-third to one-half. The entire smoking population is actually using illegal tobacco. So that's off the grid in terms of this discussion here, but what we're focusing on here are the vendors that we know have licenses, we have relationships with, and we're testing on a routine basis. To give you a sense of our capacity, we have funded through the Ministry of Health Promotion here in Ontario three full-time equivalent tobacco enforcement officers, all who are trained and are provincial offenses licensed officers, so they can actually lay the charges. We also periodically deploy our ranks of public health inspectors in peak time so we can have the public health inspectors. It just makes sense for us given that they're in those environments for food inspection as well. So they're also trained and have the capacity to do the enforcement. So it gives you a sense of what we're doing in terms of our overall capacity to enforce. And those officers not only have the responsibility to do the retail checks, but they're also responsible for all of our public and workplace inspections, our school campus inspections in accordance with the Act. So they have an array of enforcement activities that they're responsible for. They're also supported by a complement of part-time youth test shoppers, and these are our test shoppers who work with our enforcement staff to go in and actually test the vendor for compliance with the Act, so they actually attempt to purchase tobacco. And then there is a stepped-in disciplinary and enforcement approach that's highlighted on the bottom in terms of each licensed vendor. The next series of slides really just talks about the Smoke-Free Ontario Act itself, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. It's there for your review, and you can actually go on the Ontario Government's eLaws website if you have any further interest in sort of the wording or the language of the legislation. It talks a lot about supplying to persons under 19, apparent age, vicarious liability, which is a new provision within the legislation, which the owner of the business where tobacco is sold shall be deemed to be liable for any contravention of the subsections. And so it's no longer just the clerk, but it's the owner. It can't be. There has to be some due diligence there on the part of the owner to demonstrate compliance with the legislation. So those two slides deal with the regulations embedded in the legislation. So turning to slide 26, why employ GIS technology for tobacco control? Really the salient points here for our surveillance staff have been that GIS technology provides opportunities for expanded surveillance inquiry and practices to inform program operations and future development and to inform future policy development. And Hamilton Public Health Services is really the benefactor of a large repository of information through McMaster University and through our GIS section with the City of Hamilton. So we have tremendous databases within our GIS section, more so than some of our counterparts, so we're very fortunate in that regard. So this tool actually makes it more flexible for us to do this form of inquiry. And in presenting this information earlier through OTRU at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health Grand Rounds back in June, it was quite apparent from many of our colleagues, not only at OTRU, but the University of Toronto and others, that this type of inquiry is of real interest. Part of the struggle is actually having the capacity to do it. So I think that's the little caveat, that we benefit from a very strong IT environment here in the City of Hamilton to be able to support this type of work. So turning to slide 27, just an overview of tobacco vendors surveillance, and what we inputted in our first exercise was strictly data as it pertained to sale to minor offenses, sale to minor enforcement. So the data inputs in the upper left-hand corner that we were able to load into our GIS system were, in essence, our test shopper program, vendor locations, school locations, and those were all pinpointed in GIS. So we have those actual addresses through the licensing compendium, and we can enter those into GIS. Inspector district areas, streets and landmarks, and planning unit areas. Planning unit areas are used a lot by city council and our city planners in terms of overall planning and development in the city of Hamilton. And that's just a framework that policy decision makers, albeit the Board of Health, City Council, are very familiar with. So it actually gives us a common language when we're talking to decision makers about what's going on in these particular neighborhood catchment areas across our city. So after inputting those into the system, we go through a process of geocoding, and I am not a GIS expert by any means, so forgive me. If people have highly technical GIS, I'd be happy to connect you with Carol Craig and our GIS technologist, who could respond in a more informed way about specific GIS technology. However, in doing that exercise, the collation and analysis, we overlay layers of maps for production, so we can actually put large chloroplast maps, topographic maps that reflect all of the data that we're gathering and monitoring. We can do counts and density of vendors per planning unit, and where that is particularly helpful, you will see in a later slide, in terms of bringing these issues to the forefront of the attention of decision makers and impressing upon them some of the issues that you're concerned with in BC in terms of limiting access points. So to continue on to count and proportion of offenses over time, so we can actually track where the hotspots are in the city in terms of noncompliance with the legislation. For this exercise, we did vendors within 1 kilometer of each school and vendors with offenses within 1 kilometer of each school as well. So we not only looked at proximity and clustering, but we also looked at does that clustering tell us anything specifically about vendor behavior. So some of the routine outputs that come from this exercise, and this is an ongoing relationship and series of work that we're doing with our surveillance unit, what we identified as some of the routine outputs were description of offenses, keying vendor location maps. So annually we will update the maps to reflect any new licensing that's occurred in the city of Hamilton, school locations, showing vendors, vendors by planning unit map, vendor offenses by inspection district maps, so that informs our public health inspectors and our tobacco enforcement officers. Map of schools by vendors with, again, the 1 kilometer radius and the violations. And so our plan initially, and again, this is very formative work, was a subset of outputs and status reports to the Board of Health. So this was our sort of short-term vision for this was to be able to present this information and present this analysis to our Board of Health for the City of Hamilton towards looking at enhancing tobacco control activities through certain surveillance tactics, enforcement tactics, and programming that would be offered at a community level, particularly in school settings. Presentation jointly to both teams to inform their practice, and my participation today, I think, is evidence that we're getting more requests and interest in this work, as my sense is that it hasn't been done in many other jurisdictions. So SFOA sales to minors enforcement, this is the next slide, slide 28. At the time of this data collection set, we had 561 licensed tobacco vendors operating at some point in time in 07. 31 of these were not eligible for a test shopper program, primarily because those venues were identified as not being appropriate to send a teenager into, whether they be adult clubs, some venues that were still selling tobacco products that weren't your stereotypical gas station or convenience store. So those were eliminated from the list, and they have other enforcement tactics that they use on those particular venues. 909 test shopper events occurred in 2007, so we had our youth test shoppers make 909 visits to vendors across the city of Hamilton. Within that inspection framework, we had 52 warnings and 20 charges laid. Approximately 14% of eligible operating vendors within at least sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself, operating vendors with at least one sales to minor offense in 2007. So we're sort of floating in around an 85% compliance rate, which is really sort of on par with what we're seeing across the province of Ontario with some notable hotspots. So the next slide is the first in a series of maps, and I apologize, it's not the the best iteration for a PowerPoint slide. Subsequent slides are a little better, but this one is a little vague and a little light. But this was the initial exercise, basically taking all of our licensed vendors, and they're all listed on the right-hand side by planning unit, and plotting them into our GIS system and highlighting a number of pieces with them. So they're all actually coded in terms of color coding. These can be used by our inspection staff on a routine basis as they're outputted to look at the ongoing situational sort of assessment of where vendors are in the city of Hamilton. And then I'll talk a bit about what we've overlaid into that. So once we actually have this in the system, there are a number of different inquiries that we can execute based on different data that's available to us. So in our case, turning to the next slide, we looked at licensed vendors operating in 2007 and schools across the city of Hamilton. So again, they were all color-coded. What I can tell you is when we first initiated this project and these initial maps were produced and shared, I think the overall sense that we had was sort of affirmation of what we knew to be true on the ground in the city of Hamilton from working here for a number of years. But it was a very much an aha moment just using GIS to be able to actually put what we knew to be the case into a pictorial, into, you know, something visual for people to see. And so when you look at this particular map, you can see the outline of the greater city of Hamilton, which is a mix of urban and rural communities. You can see the green line, which is the Niagara Escarpment, and below the Niagara Escarpment to Lake Ontario, which is up in your upper right-hand corner, so to speak, is what is sort of historically the core or downtown old city of Hamilton. And what we discovered was, wow, we've got a lot of vendors in our downtown core, obviously. But there are a number of other issues going on in that part of our city that we thought warranted some further inquiry. But from a capacity standpoint, we also recognize that, you know, it looks like Buckshot, but from a certain capacity standpoint, much of our efforts are concentrated in that part of our city. So we need to know more about what's going on within those communities to better inform our practices. So turning to slide 31, we looked at licensed tobacco vendor sales to minor offenses by inspection district. And the graph in the bottom right-hand corner of this slide is just placed there to demonstrate that GIS is just not about maps. GIS is really an IT tool that is a data collector that can output data in different formats and can provide you with a number of different tools in order to do assessment and analysis. So it's not solely a map production system. You can produce a number of different outputs with it. So by using the inspection districts, we were able to highlight for decision makers vis-a-vis our city councilors some of the issues that were going on within their respective wards, because ultimately that's what they're concerned about. I would suggest that, you know, they are concerned about the greater city of Hamilton, but the, you know, parochial nature of local ward politics is such that, you know, there is interest in what's going on in your own neighborhood, your own constituency. So this was an exercise to be able to show the decision makers where the offenses were occurring towards having a greater discussion, a further dialogue about what to do about it. The subsequent slide, number of licensed tobacco vendors by planning unit and neighborhood, again, is color-coded. It gives you the number of offenses sort of in an increasing scale in terms of the actual color. So the darker colored squares have a greater density of offenses. As we go through, you can actually get a sense of the hotspot is that particular area of the city. So turning to slide 33, this was another exercise that we did based on some literature that was coming out of Ontario. Scott Leatherdale, a senior scientist with Cancer Care Ontario, has done some work on school proximity as it relates to tobacco point of access, tobacco vendors. And so we were curious to know, is there any correlation between the density of vendors and the proximity of schools? So we have a large database of all of our school locations in the city of Hamilton. We have approximately, we have over 30 secondary schools operating in the city and well over 200 elementary schools operating in the greater city of Hamilton. So we overlaid that data here, and you can see by looking at it in terms of where there, as the dots get larger, so the smaller the little blue dot, the lesser number of vendors operating in that particular jurisdiction within a 1 kilometer radius, and the larger the dot, the greater the density. So in the subsequent, the next slide, you can look at the relative number of licensed tobacco sales to minor offenses within 1 kilometer of schools. So now we have the actual what's going on the ground in terms of actual sale noncompliance. And again, it's telling us something. Those larger dots seem to mimic the density proximity issues to schools. And they tell us something about the overall density in terms of in the city of Hamilton. I think the aha moment for us here was that we knew that there was a correlation, but the extent to which it was there, I think, really came to light with this exercise. We don't have one school in the city of Hamilton that has less than five retailers operating within 1 kilometer, and we have several areas where they have much larger numbers. To the other end of the spectrum, where we have one particular community that has over 75 retailers operating within a 1 kilometer radius. And it's, I think, concerning that that community has a number of other social determinant factors that are bearing down on it, such as poverty, high immigrant status. There's a number of pieces that that community is currently dealing with. So how do we use this information to inform some of our enforcement practices? So an example of how this exercise has transcended into discussions with our Board of Health and with our City Council about potential policy directions. In sharing this information with our Board of Health, the direction we received back was, well, we should be doing something to really look at whether or not our licensing fee program is commensurate with the burden that this product is placing on our communities. That was number one. And so there was a recognition that municipally they still had a decision-making authority over the licensing program. Much of the legislation comes down provincially, so we're policy takers, not policy makers. But certainly on this front, we're in a position to be able to affect some positive change in terms of how vendors are responding to the legislation. So what we've been instructed to do and what we are currently in the process of doing is working with our standards and licensing colleagues within the city's planning department, planning and economic development, and we're looking at a review of current licensing practices, the fee structures, with a view to increase those fees to provide, and one suggestion, one recommendation that's on the table at the moment is to look at some educational certification requirement for vendors to acquire in connection with acquiring their license. So while we have the provincial legislation that outlines what the point of sale laws are, there is no quote-unquote educational requirement for vendors to actually go through, certify themselves, et cetera. So part of what we're talking about doing in Hamilton is potentially ramping up the fee, driving those revenues into further enforcement inspection, and providing a certification program for owner-operators so that we can demonstrate that they have, in fact, gone through the due diligence to understand what their obligations accountability is under the current law. So that's a little different than most jurisdictions. We're actually going to be saying, you know, in order to get your license, you're going to have to complete this certification so you know what is required of you in selling these products. It does open the door to further discussion, however, about, and we've seen this already on the ground with some of our local councillors, how many is too many in a particular community. And so when you show the maps and you start talking about it at a very base level, people look to see where they live and say, why do I have so many in my neighborhood comparative to others, even when population density is considered? Is that number too many? And so from a very practical standpoint, we would argue it is from our ability to effectively develop positive relationships with those owner-operators, our ability to inspect beyond the provincial protocol of twice per year. So the argument being, if you could bring the number of vendors down, we would have an increased capacity to effectively enforce. So one of the other interesting points of inquiry we did, using a measurement for socioeconomic status and neighborhood types that was developed here in Ontario, actually by Tom Abernathy and his group out of Hamilton, they developed a series of indicators around SES and neighborhood types, and the reference is there should you be interested in it. So there were five different measures that were identified, and the qualifiers are on the right-hand side. What we then did was we took this data and we applied it to the exercise we had done with our mapping project and with our school proximity, et cetera, and it led us to slide 37, which is entitled Tobacco Vendors and Sales to Minor Offenses by Socioeconomic Neighborhood Type. And it's really telling to us in terms of we see a trending here. If you go A through E, in the mature, low-economic urban transition communities, you see something happening. But I think color-coded-wise, you see it gradually going from more affluent, more stable neighborhoods, ones with less transition in population, to sort of our old part of Hamilton in terms of low socioeconomic status, high minority, high diversity. There is a greater clustering of vendors, but we're also seeing that the offenses are much higher. So they range from 8% to doubling it with 16%. So we know that in those particular communities, we have our work cut out for us. And from a practical application side, we know that going forward, we can marry the GIS technology to the IT technology that our enforcement officers and our public health inspectors are using in terms of their data collection and their routine inspection. We can marry those two pieces of technology so that not only do they have mobile access to this information as it's updated on a routine basis, but there's a number of other things that they can do with it. And so how this transcends over sort of to our prevention side of our business is that all of this information provides us with some very strong analysis of where we might want to invest programming or interventions in the community regarding tobacco control. So in the city of Hamilton, for instance, we have been working with both boards of education, the public and Catholic Board of Education, for many years. We have a very strong relationship with them. We have a comprehensive school health program in each of our high schools and in a number of our elementary schools. We do fund each high school in the city of Hamilton annually to a cap of $1,000 to do actual localized neighborhood tobacco control activities, largely youth mobilization, youth advocacy activities. So this exercise, at least in the short term, is a window of opportunity for us to work with those schools, look at some of the mapping, and say, these are issues that are confronting your particular community, your particular school, and suggest to them potential areas for exploration, potential activities. So as opposed to, you know, smoking's bad for you, it hurts your lungs, we've been really stressing things like, well, maybe you want to be involved in a community mobilization advocacy project to talk about why is our community saturated with tobacco vendors. And here's some evidence to support that. Or perhaps you want to do something about smoking on school property. you know, further to the legislation, because we see that you've got such a clustering and such a higher density of vendors in your neighborhood, access is an issue. So there's a number of ways that we can actually inform community-based public health programming and prevention activities that are going on at the community level. Again, this is just one type of inquiry that can be done with this system. You can do a number of other things. It's very much open to your own creativity and your own sort of thought process as to, you know, what would we want to look at once we have this information here. But from our standpoint going forward, our interest is in marrying the technology that our inspectors use with the GIS technology so that a lot of the routine data outputs can be done rather quickly, and they can inform our enforcement program in terms of where do we best invest limited resources commensurate with, you know, the greater city of Hamilton and the market environment we see for tobacco products at present. We also think in the mid to long term that further exploration using GIS will only support and enhance arguments to look at not only more stringent licensing requirements, but perhaps, you know, looking at moratoriums on the issuance of licenses, looking at a number of things in terms of catchment areas where we have some precedent with local bylaws and ordinances to limit the number per planning unit. So, for example, in the city of Hamilton, we have a long-term care bylaw that limits the number of long-term care facilities that can be built within a particular planning unit. So we do have a precedent that is supported corporately across the city that could be argued and set against tobacco product vendors to say, you know, we think 500 is too many. What that threshold would be, I think, is still up for debate and discussion, but it's obviously not 500. Maybe it's 150. And what would be the determining factors from a planning perspective as to where those licenses would be situated? And how do you go about getting there? Because ultimately, you know, there are competing priorities at the policy table. Our Board of Health is our city council. And so while there is a concern for overall population health and health in our communities, the competing interests of small business, et cetera, are always, I think, top of mind with people. So that, in a nutshell, is what we have been doing. Going forward, we're meeting with our surveillance unit on an ongoing basis. We routinely update these maps, and we're going to be looking at sort of a standard set of inquiries that we want to do over time, so we have some benchmarks and some comparators going forward, and we can do some analysis as to how the progress is going. Certainly, it does provide us with other opportunities for inquiry in terms of some of the maps will demonstrate that even though density is present in other parts of the community, particularly in the west end of the community, which is a more affluent, long-established area of the city, density is still an issue, but compliance is rather high. So what can we learn from that particular retail community? Why are they compliant comparative to, say, the old city? So there's a number of things that the tool affords us the opportunity, you know, to look at and examine more thoroughly. And I think going forward, it's very similar. We've used this application for things such as our blood lead monitoring here in the city of Hamilton, West Nile virus. So it has a lot of applicability to surveillance for population health and public health in particular. That's sort of, in a nutshell, what we've been doing. So I'd be happy to entertain any questions or comments that people have.
Kevin, thank you so much. I think that there'll be a lot of questions here, and I'm going to open it up so that people can have the maximum opportunity for questions. I know that there are a number of people that are probably chomping at the bit here. So if you could just say your name and what your question might be to Kevin, that would be great. We have about 5 to 10 minutes for questions.
It's all crystal clear.
But people are probably just going off mute. So, Kevin, I have a question for you. So in terms of this information, I'm sure that for decision makers, it helps provide them more rationale in terms of moving forward. So what has been the receptivity of the decision makers as you've been presented with this information, and where are they going to go next with it?
Right. Well, this was part, and Jack, you and I discussed this on an earlier call, but this was part of an exercise that our Board of Health had requested from us, a recommendation report on what was still within their decision-making envelope to do as it pertained to local tobacco control. I think that was largely driven out of a recognition that with the implementation of the Smoke-Free Ontario Act, much of what had been sort of at the municipal level in terms of smoke-free bylaws, et cetera, had now been uploaded to a large provincially. And so they wanted to know, what can we still do to affect positive health change in our community? So we outlined to them a number of things, not only sort of further smoke-free restrictions beyond what the Act stipulates, but in terms of sort of emerging issues in tobacco control. A couple of those issues were largely advocacy to other levels of government, whether they be around contraband, illegal tobacco. Here in Ontario, the smoke-free vehicles legislation that will come into being this coming January. So our Board of Health just sent a letter of support to the provincial government for that piece of legislation, but highlighting locally that there was still quite a few opportunities for them to be involved in tobacco control along the lines of retailers, along the lines of smoke-free public spaces, outdoor environments that is outside sort of the catchment of the Smoke-Free Ontario Act, and smoke-free social housing, which council themselves put on the radar. We didn't actually put it on there for them. It came up when Michael Perley was invited to speak to our Board of Health and flagged smoke-free housing as an emerging issue, and our Board of Health was quite impressed with that presentation. And asked us to do some further inquiry. Subsequently, we've been in touch with folks like yourself and Sharon to talk about what's going on in BC in that area. So in showing them the maps as it relates to the retailers, I just can't emphasize enough, it just brings home to roost, visually for them, what's going on in the community. When we put it in front of them on paper, it's very easy to be dismissed, but when you put it up visually for everybody to see, the reporters who frequently attend Board of Health City Council meetings all kind of went, wow, look at that. you don't really think of it when it's just a number on paper, but when you look at it and it becomes living, breathing, and real to you, you start to say, hey, maybe there is something here that should be addressed. So it does lend itself to that sort of very tangible everyday people living in the community to say, that's our community, and look at the number of them. It's just out of whack with all other products that are being sold, so do we need to address it? And overlaying it with things like proximity to schools just reinforces that, which is 75 vendors of this product within a 1 kilometer radius of some of our most economically and challenged schools is probably not a good idea.
Kevin, this is Suzanne. I have a question as well, whether you've considered something like the price of tobacco as a factor as well. So, we have the domestic brands of cigarettes mm-hmm. that tend to be cheaper, and we see in certain areas of our cities as well that, these are advertised way, they're cheaper than other areas of the city, and whether mm-hmm. that's something that would be quite enlightening as well.
Yeah, it would be, and we did have some discussion about it. One of the sort of on-the-ground realities for us is we'd have to do a lot of legwork because the Smoke-Free Ontario Act now prohibits point-of-sale advertising. It used to be a cluttered environment of roadside signs, makeshift signs, $7 a pack, $8.50 a pack. Those no longer are there. So you actually have to go into the stores to find out where people are price pointing the product. I think we could do it on a smaller scale, but it's an interesting point of inquiry to see. Given the clustering, one would suspect that it's going to be a highly more competitive, localized market in those areas where the clustering is taking place because they need to be able to somehow leverage, the customer over the person who's right next door to them, right? So I think it would be an interesting inquiry. We haven't done it.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for a wonderful presentation. It's very enlightening. I did have a question about an intriguing point you made in terms of looking at attaching some education curricula to the retailers,
right,
in order for them to have their licenses renewed.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had a question about, is the issue then a matter of the sales being a matter of lack of education? That's the first thing. And the second, I mean the sales to minors, and the second thing is whether you anticipate adding such a component would decrease the actual sales to minors.
Right. What I can tell you is in Ontario we've had collateral education going on with the Tobacco Control Act up to the introduction of the Smoke-Free Ontario Act. And with the introduction of the new revised act in 06, with the inclusion of broader provisions around point of sale restrictions, it was clear to us that we had a lot of work to do with vendors about what the new requirements were. That work, there are a number of challenges with that work in terms of our overall capacity to spend, you know, the appropriate amount of time with each vendor to do a thorough inspection of the actual premises, compounded by things like language of origin. So we have a number of languages spoken in the greater city of Hamilton, so you have a number of South Asian languages being spoken. So those present clear challenges to us. So in terms of not knowing what the law is, we frequently are confronted with that in terms of not only owners but individual clerks, because the environment is such that obviously you have a lot of part-time clerks working, many of whom are teenagers or young adults. The extent to which the owner has thoroughly apprised that clerk of what their responsibilities and accountability is pursuant to the Act, I think varies from store to store. We've used a program in the past called Not to Kids here in Ontario, where we encourage owner-operators of these premises to ensure that all clerks are in service, so to speak, on what the requirements are, and to demonstrate the due diligence, they should have the clerk sign off on that educational program. Again, it's not a requirement. This is a nice to do, so it's not that they are bound to do it. So in terms of going forward, actually requiring people to do it would ensure that, you know, it's tied to your license. So your ability to actually renew or acquire a license would be contingent on going through such a program, so that should you demonstrate to be non-compliant, we can go back and say, well, the due diligence was there. You actually had to be certified to get this. So, you know, what's the problem here? So we're not confronted with, I didn't know that, you know, oh, my manager didn't tell me that was the law. Oh, I misunderstood the law. It would just bring a more sort of harmonized approach so that people could, you know, be clear about what the requirements are in holding that license. So my suspicion would be sort of at the grassroots level, at the frontline level where clerks are concerned, more so than owners, because often we're only talking to owners or management, it would increase the knowledge base and increase the awareness amongst those who are actually, you know, doing the transaction as to what the law was. And I think that would help to some degree ramp up some compliance.
Thanks, Kevin, and thanks, Zim, for that good question. We are nearing the end of our hour, and so Kevin, you have generously provided your contact information at the end of the PowerPoint presentation, and so I think that is an offer to everyone. If people have additional questions or would like to explore this further with Kevin, that he's certainly open to being contacted. Is that correct, Kevin?
Yeah, absolutely. That's not a problem, Jack. Anybody, you know, specifically, as I referenced in terms of sort of the technical aspects of GIS, if you're working with GIS folks in your respective communities or have access to that technology, then we'd be happy to hook you up with our colleagues as well.
That's great. Well, Kevin, on behalf of the group, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to present to us this morning, and I know that there will be many people that might be getting in touch with you about some of this, because I think that, to me, it's a very interesting way to demonstrate what is going on in tobacco control, and, you know, there are some applicabilities in other ways, because I know that there's other types of mapping that people have been exploring, so I really appreciate your time. And I appreciate everyone else's time this morning, and I hope you have a good rest of the day. And we will be sending out some follow-up notes with a few of the questions that came up this morning, and a reminder about future knowledge exchange meetings that will be coming up in Vancouver as well as over the phone. So thanks, everyone, and we'll talk to you all soon. And again, thank you very much.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks. Bye. Thanks. Bye.